Well, hello.
Hello. This is always a fun, awkward part.
Yep. The awkward beginning of what do we talk about? I will say I noticed just now that my legs still are tacky, even though I washed myself after my dance class. I still have tack on my legs. So that's great. It makes it easier for you to stick to the pole. And apparently it's really hard to get off. So
yeah.
I'll be going to scrub my legs again after this episode.
Yeah, this one will be coming out after my birthday, right?
I don't know.
I think so.
Happy birthday. No, it'll be the day before your birthday. It is the day after your birthday. I'm looking at a different month. Why is it on there? Yeah, it'll be.
I've been doing that too. It's 2 days after my birthday.
Happy birthday, Roya.
Thank you. Thank you, Casey.
Look at you being birthed.
Look at you getting old.
Yep.
God, I have so many white hairs this year. I don't know if it's just age or stress or both.
I haven't looked at my roots in so long. I just keep covering them up.
Don't look at me. Almost all of my white hairs are concentrated like right on one side mm-hmm. of my head. And I'm like, I want a rogue streak. Like I want to just like a big everything. White streak of hair.
That is not unique to you. Everybody's hoping for a rogue streak. Stacey London got the best of it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hoping that I will just, like my mom and uncle, I'll just go white, like just full
yeah.
white.
Your mom had really pretty hair.
Yeah, she didn't think so, but yeah, she did.
Well.
Yeah.
I would tell her otherwise, but.
You know.
Sorry.
Get out your Ouija board.
I would.
Dear Roya's mom, you had nice hair.
I thought your hair was very pretty color. Thank you for the sushi.
Love, Casey.
Love, Casey. Don't let Pazuzu get to my Ouija board.
Thank you. Thank you. P.S.
Well, speaking of ghosts, let's get started.
Welcome to The Strange and Unusual, where we discuss the strange and unusual. This is episode 175 of our series, seeking out the weird, the unexplained, and the devious from around the world. I'm Roya.
And I'm Casey.
And this week, Casey will be sharing a little baby ghost story for all the spooky bitches in the new year.
Hell yeah.
As always, you can find us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Threads, Patreon.com/strangeunusual. And all of that will be at the end of the episode in more detail, as well as in the show notes. So, Casey, what are you?
Are you ready for this shit?
I think so. But we'll see.
This bitch is crazy. Wee woo. Oh, so also, you probably have heard this before, but wee woo. Potential murder?
Death, we love a potential for sure. murder.
Death for sure. Death of an infant, unfortunately.
Boo.
Potential conspiracies about sexual assault. Poison, ghosts, capitalism, landlords, loan sharks. It's all here, folks. Picture it. England, 1756. Or 57. Who knows?
Yeah, time.
A usurer, that's a word, named William Kent, married Elizabeth Lines, and they moved to Stoke Ferry in Norfolk, England. I'm sure you're wondering, Casey, what's a usurer? Is that what you're wondering?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A usurer, I don't even know if I'm saying it right, but it's essentially what we would know today as a loan shark. This guy would loan out money with grotesque interest rates or otherwise take advantage of others' misfortunes. He's a stand-up guy.
Real pillar of the community.
No, the pillar of the community comes later. This guy, he had an inn. He ran an inn in Stoke Ferry, and he also ran the post office. So he was pretty busy. He had his fingers in a lot of pies, you might say. And by all accounts, Billy and Liz were very much in love. I should also mention this story has a lot of nicknames. Some are sourced nicknames. Other ones I just came up with because I liked them. So this is Billy and Liz. And so, yeah, they're very much in love. And it's not long before he puts a bun in the oven, right? Elizabeth's sister, Frances, also known as Fanny, which is funny because that's British slang for your hoo-ha. Fanny moves in to
your vagooba.
Yeah. God, I will never forget that fucking day. You told me that. And I was just like, excuse me. Fanny moves in to help because her sister is a pregante. And unfortunately, tragedy struck and Lizzie died in childbirth because it's 1757, 50, whatever. I can't remember which source I got this from, but it was estimated that every one in 1,000 births ended in death. So,
wow.
Like, Yeah, not uncommon. And Fanny decided to stay with William to make sure he and the baby were taken care of, because who wants to be a single dad when you're running an inn in a post office and you're stealing people's money? And as you probably gathered from the wee-woos, William and Elizabeth's son only made it a few weeks before passing away as well. Again, it's the 18th century. The child mortality rate in the United Kingdom at this time for children was, like, I think I read that it was 1800, the year 1800, and the rate of deaths in children under five was 329 deaths per 1,000.
Wow.
Children, yeah. And that means approximately one in every three children born in 1800 did not make it to their fifth birthday.
And I mean, that's 50 years different.
Yep. In 2020, that number was down to four in every 1,000 births.
Wow.
So let's give it up for modern medicine, everybody.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that happened. William is grieving. Fanny stays to help with the housework. And while she's there, she and William grow quite attached to one another.
Yeah, as you do.
They're grieving together. They're going through similar hurt. They're the only support system they have. This, unfortunately, was not a love for the ages. However, as it turns out, marrying your deceased wife's sister is a no-no in canon law.
Hmm.
Which brings us to a new segment. Everybody, are we so excited? This one I'm calling Holy Baloney, which is similar to the segment Baloney, only with more Jesus. Thank you. Thank you for laughing.
Fantastic. Incredible.
So, canon law, for those who aren't in the know, is like a set of ordinances and regulations made by ecclesiastical authorities for the government of a Christian organization specifically, or a church and its members that are just like developed within Christianity, particularly Roman Catholicism, governing the internal hierarchy and administration of the church. You follow?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Now you're probably thinking, but Casey, the Second Catholic Relief Act, which allowed English Catholics to practice their religion without fear of prosecution, subject to swearing an oath of loyalty to the monarch, wasn't passed until 1791.
I was thinking exactly that.
Yeah, right? And so I say to that, yeah, and I'm not a historian. I'm just telling you a story. But the Anglican Communion, which means Church of England, they had their own canon law as well, because as a non-theologian, I have always gathered that the Church of England is basically just Catholic light. So not to offend anybody if that's not true, that's just what I've heard on the grapevine. And as we know, grape makes wine, which Jesus was a fan of.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing it all full circle here.
Kinda.
Anyway, so this comes from the rule of affinity, which from what a quick Google search tells me, says that if you're related, you're forbidden by the church to marry. Okay. And so you're thinking, okay, but Fanny and William aren't related, right? There's this list of marriage prohibitions that was whipped up in 1560 by Queen Elizabeth's Archbishop of Canterbury, Matthew Parker, resulting in the Anglican law, or like one of the parts of their canon law, which was the Table of Kindred and Affinity, wherein whosoever are related are forbidden in scripture and our laws to marry together. That's the title. And this list, for men specifically, included mother, daughter, father's mother, mother's mother, son's daughter, daughter's daughter, sister, wife's mother, your son's wife, your son's son's wife, or your daughter's son's wife, just to name a few. And women had like the same list, but opposite. So like father, son, etc. And basically, if I understand this correctly, once a couple was married, they were considered to be of, quote, one flesh, and their words, not mine. So Bill's marriage to Liz made Fanny his kin, and in the eyes of the law, his sister, full stop. Thus, their relationship was illegal. So, like, she wasn't his sister-in-law, she was his sister, because they were a union.
Give me just a second, because I have a question.
Okay.
But I also have a bite of food, man.
Okay. I think this next part I'm just going to say, and then if you still have the question. All right. So, even though they aren't blood, by the standards of these societal and moral constructs, they would be in an incestuous relationship, and their relationship could face real legal consequences, which is important later. I mean, it's good on them to crack down on incest, but...
So, my question is, like, what if it's... So, it wouldn't have been uncommon at the time, necessarily, to have, like, two families marry together. So if you have like husband and wife from two separate families and they marry and they become kin, what if said man has a sister who marries the brother of, is that kin?
I don't think there's one that says you can't marry your sister's husband's brother.
Okay.
But just for funsies, I'm going to look. Because I think they're only ever three apart. So it's like your son's son's daughter or, you know, that sort of thing. But I can find it. The table of kindred affinity, wherein whosoever are related are forbidden to scripture and our laws to marry together. I just want you to show me the table. Thank you. All right. So what did you say? You said your sister's husband's brother?
Yeah.
You can't marry your sister's husband. You can't marry your sister's daughter's husband. I don't see anything that says there's nothing about your husband's sibling.
Okay. I just wasn't sure.
You can't marry your husband's uncle because it says you can't marry your husband's father's brother or your husband's mother's brother. But okay. I don't see anything on here about your husband's brother's or your brother's husband's sister or whatever.
Yeah, I got you. Okay. I was just curious because I was like, that's not an uncommon thing of the times.
Yeah.
So does it just not?
Yeah, it looks like, according to the list I'm looking at, no, that's not on the list.
Okay.
It didn't make the list. That's the list. Okay. So yeah, good for them cracking down on incest. We love that. Especially with the English, they had a really bad time of things, especially in the royal family. And though a marriage to a deceased wife's sister's bill, yes, a bill called Marriage to a Deceased Wife's Sister was introduced in 1842, it failed miserably. And it wasn't until 1907 that Parliament started to seriously chip away at these prohibitions, and it was that year that the Deceased Wife's Sister's Marriage Act was passed. Again, that's the literal name. In 1940, the King's, quote, Commission on Kindred and Affinity as Impediments to Marriage, unquote, recommended that the church allow marriages to, quote, a father's brother's wife, a wife's father's sister, a wife's mother's sister, wife's sister's brother's wife, a mother brother's wife,
a mother brother,
mother's brother's wife, brother's son's wife, sister's son's wife, wife's brother's daughter, wife's sister's daughter. Those are all fine now, as of 1940. Those are now within, they lined up with civil law. Those were not civilly illegal, only in 1940, but they were not legal within the church.
Mm.
And since the king heads the church, that's why they had to like ask him, like, can we chip away at these? And he was like, yeah, fuck it. Don't marry your first cousin, though. That's bad news.
Stay anyway, away so, from the incest. Stay away from direct incest.
Yeah, yeah. But back to William and Fanny.
Well, that's so William tells Fanny, "Stay away from incest."
William tells Fanny, "Baby, I love you, but we can't go on like this." And so he sells his post office and he fucks off to London, hoping that, quote, business would erase that passion he had unfortunately indulged. And Fanny ends up moving in with her brother, and that would be her actual brother, not her sister's husband.
Got it.
So Fanny was not having it. She did not like this life. She was desperately in love and honestly probably a fallen woman at this point. And she proceeded to write all these love letters to William, quote, filled with repeated entreaties to spend the rest of their lives together. And so he caves to this love and he moves her in with him in London, where they play themselves off as Mr. and Mrs. Kent. They even make wills to make sure that the other is taken care of, just like a real married couple would. Eventually, though, their landlord figured them out and they were on the move. One thing to note is that William actually had lended the landlord money, and the landlord found out about this and then refused to pay it because he was like, well, I could blackmail you by telling people that you're fucking your sister. Because in the eyes of society, he was.
Yeah. You
know? I guess incest probably should have been a wee-woo on this. It's not real incest, though. It's just fake incest.
It's religious incest. It's religious incest. Man-made incest.
So now there's a new player on the board. Are you ready?
Yes.
To meet Richard Parsons. Richard is the officiating clerk. Blah, blah, blah. The officiating clerk at the Church of Saint Sepulchre without Newgate. So clearly, upstanding citizen, pillar of the community, you might say. Parsons, despite this well-respected position, was known to be something of a lush. He liked the drink. He pissed away all of his money on the bottle and struggled to support his family. So when he met Mr. and Mrs. Kent, allegedly, who was now heavily pregnant, by the way, a pregnant, perhaps, they met at church. Pergante. And They said they were looking for a place to live, and Richard said, I would be a great landlord. I have a room in my home. Come stay at my house. I have a a three-story house on Cock Lane.
Of course, Dick has a house
on Cock Lane. And they're like, yes, this sounds great. It'll be, we'll move in, and they move in with their maid, who is named Esther Carlisle, but they called her Carrots because of her red hair, which is the thing I said to you earlier. Carrots. Well, this worked out just fine for everybody involved, and Billy and Dick really hit it off. They were pals, so much so that William decided to lend Richard 12 guineas to be paid back 1 guinea per month. Would you like to take a wild guess at how much that was?
Like in today? 100 bucks a month.
It was, 12 guineas was about $2,000.
Okay.
So not too far off.
Yeah.
Anyway, after this, Bill is like, I gotta go to a wedding. I'm gonna go travel. And he leaves, and he works it out with his buddy Dick that his daughter Elizabeth, or Betty, who was around 11 or 12, would stay with Fanny and keep her company and sleep in her bed. Which, again, not weird for the time. She was alone. She needed company. She was gonna stay with this lady. So they're sleeping in the same bed. They're just chilling. And that was when the two reported hearing disturbing scratching and knocking noises at night coming from the lower part of the wood paneling on the walls in the room. At first, they thought it might just be the cobbler who worked next door, but the noises continued even on Sunday, which is the Lord's Day. And so it was doubtful that he would be making shoes on the Lord's Day.
I mean, unless he was a heathen.
He might have been a heathen. We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know his life.
But there was also a witness to a specter for a man named James Franzen. He was a landlord to a nearby pub. He comes a-callin' to see his friend Dick Parsons.
On Cock Lane.
But Dick wasn't home, so James was invited to come in and wait. And that was when he reported seeing a ghostly, glowing white figure just zooming up the stairs. Just like, whoosh, as a good way to describe it. And Richie came back later, and he claimed to have also seen the ghosts because James, like, immediately dipped.
I mean,
James is like, tell Dick I was here. Bye. I got spooked. I'm out.
Can't necessarily blame him.
So once William returns home, Betty's no longer needed in the Kent's lodgings. The noises were no longer a problem. Sus. Little Dickie still owed Billy Boy money, though, and relations quickly went south. Some sources suggest that perhaps Bill and Dick got a little chummy, and he let it slip that he is maybe fucking his sister. Others posit that Fanny was the one who spilled the beans to Betty, as they had grown attached, spending so much time together. But it's pretty well established that the affair was found out, and Dick Parsons wasn't willing to pay up. Well, you find out that a dude's fucking his sister, you don't have to pay
him. Yeah, that's kind of a thing you want to keep close to your vest if you are loaning money, especially.
Yeah.
And want to get that money back.
Yeah. So Bill and Fanny move again, having to find somewhere else to live because the house that William was having built for them wasn't finished yet, so they couldn't move into their home yet. But unfortunately, the move did not go so well for the couple, and Fanny came down with a fever and was later diagnosed with smallpox. Doctors suggested that Fanny be moved immediately to better lodgings, but just after being moved into their home, Fanny and their unborn child passed away between January and February of 1760.
Damn.
But don't feel too bad for William, because remember, he's a loan shark who inherited all of his not-wife's estate and his actual wife's, presumably, much to the dismay of the Lyons family, resulting in a number of lawsuits. He became a stockbroker, and he also married in less than a year, so he clearly wasn't too grieved. See, William was the executor, the sole executor of Fanny's will. And he ordered this coffin for her, but didn't put a name on it for fear that he would be found out and prosecuted for playing house with his dead wife's sister. However, he didn't have a choice but to put a name for the burial registration, and he gave her his name. He tried to do right by her. So when her family was notified, and when her sister Anne especially learned about the will and everything being left to William except for half a crown to each of her siblings, they tried and failed to have it blocked legally. Most of what Kent got from the deal was Fanny's 150-pound share of her dead brother Thomas's estate, which comes to something like £22,000, or $28,000 in Americans.
Americans.
Yeah, there were some other issues involved in like the messy inheritance situation. Her family got rightfully pissed, but not super important to go into detail about that. Because meanwhile, Bill decided to sue Richard for the loan he defaulted on and managed to collect that debt by January of 1762. And just around that time, the noises heard in the room at Cock Lane began again. So, being sued by William and knowing the incestuous secret, it suggested that Parsons started to spread a couple rumors that the first round of knocking and scratching noises were that of Elizabeth Lyons, and the first, an actual Miss Kent, Mrs. Kent, was trying to warn Fanny about, you know, an impending doom. But these new noises were now clearly the ghost of Fanny, earning the ghost the nickname Scratching Fanny.
That's unfortunate.
And they were suggesting that the spirit was attached to wee Betty Parsons, who was sharing her bed. It was reported that Betty suffered from fits and that there were regular unexplained noises around the house. Parsons even had the wainscoting removed from the walls around Betty's bed to try to eliminate any anything that something could scratch on.
Yeah.
And being a religious man, of course, he reached out to John Moore, an assistant preacher at the Methodist Church. And just FYI, for the sake of this information I'm giving you, Methodists were at this time particularly interested in the spirit world. I mean, I can't speak to Methodists now. Maybe they still are. But shout out in the comics, Methodists. Let me know if you like ghosts. But anyway, it was basically assumed that this ghost had come with a warning. And that's kind of what they believed, was like, if there's a ghost, God sent somebody to tell you something was going on. And so they start having these seances where they communicate with the spirit by asking questions, which would be answered in knocks. One knock for yes, two knocks for no. And of course, they had to go to these seances with Elizabeth present because the ghost was attached to her. And she very clearly told people that Fanny communicated best in the dark, which is not suspicious in the least.
Yeah.
LOL. So they happened in, they did most of these like in her bedroom when she was put to bed so that she was there but asleep. I gather, through this system, they seemed to be able to confirm that this was in fact the ghost of Frances Lyons and that she had not died of smallpox, but guess what? Arsenic poisoning administered by none other than her not husband, brother, William Kent.
Oh, damn.
Only when he was hanged could her soul truly be at rest. So John Moore had also heard from sister Anne Lyons, who we discussed, already hates William, obviously, because she's like, that 100% happened. He definitely did that. And revealed, like, he also apparently had the coffin sealed before anybody could see the body, which, as I've probably mentioned before, like, that's a really important thing when you're trying to grieve. And, like, especially back then, they had, like, this whole culture around, like, touching and cleaning and taking care of the body. And, like, what if there were no smallpox? But he was like trying to hide that shit and like seal the casket, throw her in there, you know, like I poisoned her. I don't want people to know. So as rumors spread, there were accusations being thrown at William in print called the Public Ledger, claiming that he was a murderer. So he decided, he's like, I need to fucking clear my name. This is bullshit. And went to John Moore himself and was invited to speak with Fanny at the seance, as if that's going to solve everything. So on January 12th, William and two doctors who attended Fanny as she died went to Cock. And just to be clear, at this point, Parsons is making mad fucking money. Like, people are lining up to come investigate this ghost at his house, and he's charging them. Like,
yeah,
this is a lucrative business for him. It's a sensation about the town. And the seance does not go well for William, let me tell you. He supposedly, there's a heckler in the crowd that says, ask William to ask Fanny if he will hang for what he did. And Fanny knocks once for yes. And William is quoted as saying, thou art a lying spirit. Thou art not the ghost of my Fanny. She would never have said any such thing.
Thou art a liar.
Not my Fanny. So he returned for another seance on the 18th with the apothecary and a local priest, and the clergyman tried to look under the bed with a candle, and the ghost, quote, refused to answer questions because, like Betty said, she didn't like the light. Then Carrots got invited to a seance and was asked to confirm that Fanny had been poisoned, But she was like, no way. They were super in love. That didn't happen. And so during the seance, Carrots asked Fanny, quote, Fanny, if she was angry with her. And she got a single yes knock in return, to which she replied, then I am sure, madam, you may be ashamed of yourself, for I never hurt you in my life. And then they were like, oh, fuck, cut. Seance over. They didn't like the Carrots. Confident Carrot. So rumors running wild. Queues of people wanting to take part in this seance business are like blocking the streets of Cock Lane. And so an investigation is opened up. Like literal police get involved to figure out what's going on with this ghost.
Oh, what a time to be alive.
Actual London coppers. Elizabeth is moved. Betty Parsons is moved to St. Bartholomew's Hospital for study, and another seance was held. However, there were only 3 scratches heard around 6 a.m., leaving the audience feeling pretty deceived. They were like, this is some bullshit. And so Betty woke up and was crying, and when asked what was going on, she said she was worried for her father, quote, who must needs be ruined and undone if the matter should be supposed to be an imposture, admitting that she had been awake to hear people's complaints and that she was aware that if things went south, her dad was fucked. The investigation ended with a seance around the vault, which Fanny was buried. There were no knocks, ghosts of no kind, and even William Kent was present, so like if she was gonna say some shit, he was the one she would want to say it to. So Moore, the priest, he decided that maybe it actually isn't Fanny after all. Maybe it's an impostor.
An impostore. A sham. A charlatan.
So Billy's like, all right, great, thank you. Finally, give me an affidavit to clear my name. And the priest is like, nah, dude, you still suck. This ghost is a reminder of your sins for fucking your sister.
Damn.
Literally, like, he's like, you did this. This is on you. He thought it was still a ghost, but didn't think it was Fanny. And that the ghost was there to, like, you know, Ebenezer Scrooge this guy. Or I should say Jacob Marley this guy. But meanwhile, all this is happening. And Parsons is like, no, seriously, it's a real ghost. It's a real ghost here. Study my kid some more. And so like they took Betty through all these weird tests. Like they would hang her upside down in a hammock from the ceiling.
Oh God.
They would like tie her hands down, like her arms and legs. Magically there were no knocks anytime she had her hands outside of the bed.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. But she never confessed. It was her maids. Her maids narked, telling the authorities that they saw the girl concealing a small piece of wood. And meanwhile, Kent was still trying to clear his name. There were rumors going around that Fanny's body had been removed from the vault, and that was why there was no knock on the coffin during the seance. But there was a quick exhumation of the body, and it proved that to be a lie. It also proved that William Kent had not poisoned Fanny. And I'm going to loop around back to this because this is where there was like a weird fork in the road. And most of my sources said that like, no, Fanny died of smallpox. But there was one podcast I listened to that took a weird fucking left turn, and I could only find one source for what they were talking about. So I'm going to come back to that in a minute. But on July 10th, 1762, the case went to trial brought by William Kent against the defendants. There were 5. Quote, for conspiracy to take away his life by charging him with the murder of Frances Lyons by giving her poison whereof she died. And it took the jury only 15 minutes to reach the verdict of guilty for all 5 defendants, including the priest John Moore, Richard Parsons, and his wife, as well as 2 other accomplices. The funny thing is Richard Parsons, because the story got so much like hype and it was so so many people like believed in this ghost, right?
Mm-hmm.
Richard Parsons was put in the pillory. You know what a pillory is?
Okay.
For those of you who don't know what a pillory is, it's like stocks, basically. Like it's where your head and your hands are out, but like you're like on display. But anyway, so he's put in the pillory like 3 times in that year and he's imprisoned. And everybody was like raising money for him, basically. Like people treated him really well in the pillory instead of throwing tomatoes at his face.
Well, that's unfortunate.
These are both really shitty people. I just feel bad for Fanny and Elizabeth.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where the story ends. But it was weird that I heard this podcast. What was it? It was Let's Get Haunted, I think is what it was called. Yeah, Let's Get Haunted. And when they were talking about it, they went the exact opposite direction, is that they found out that she had been poisoned, but not by William Kent, by Richard Parson.
Oh, wow.
And so the theory is that when William Kent would go away on business, Richard Parson would be a disgusting man and be like, I want to have sex with you.
Ew.
And if you don't have sex with me, you can't live here anymore. And, you know, like threats and blackmail to make her have sex with him. And he basically said, or, you know, she, I guess, acquiesced to this coercion and eventually told him that, no, she was done. She was like, I don't want to have sex with you anymore. And he started poisoning her.
Damn.
I could not find any source for this, however. The only evidence I saw vaguely mentioned, because I by the time I heard this, I didn't have time to get the book and read, was that there's a book called The Cock Lane Ghost, Murder, Sex, and Haunting in Dr. Johnson's London by Paul Chambers, which was published in 2006. And the only reason I believe that this might be where they got that information from is this, is like the synopsis, which says, when Francis died, a mysterious ghostly conspiracy against Kent began, gathering so much momentum that it almost led to him being hanged for murder. That says hung for murder, but it's supposed to be hanged, so whoever wrote this is dumb. Further concluding that this is probably not true information. At the heart of the affair was a story of sexual infatuation, conspiracy, and accusations of murder and rape, and alleged return of the victim from beyond the grave to point out a killer. The case aroused huge public curiosity, was the subject of insatiable spinning of London's early newspaper industry, and ultimately involves figures such as Dr. Samuel Johnson. And the mention of rape is the only reason why I think that might be where this is coming from. But I have not looked into that. If anybody else knows more about this case, I would be interested to hear that. No other source I saw or listened to ever mentioned that was how it actually shook out. So would be curious to know.
Yeah.
But I wanted to make you aware that is apparently a conspiracy or a thought, a theory perhaps. Just not one that I tend to believe at this point. But otherwise, that is the story of the ghost of Cock Lane and Scratching Fanny. Oh yeah, I do the outro for this. So thanks for joining us today for the story of Scratching Fanny and the Ghost of Cock Lane. Now we want to hear from you. Send your stories, your questions, and your feedback to strangeunusualpodcast@gmail.com. If you are sending a story, we just ask that you put listener story in the subject line so that we can sort through those a little more easily. Have you ever been to Cock Lane? I hear it's open that you can go look.
Do you ever have a Scratching Fanny?
Yeah, I don't care to know about
that. Go get that checked out by your doctor.
Yeah, call your OBGYN.
You can also find us on Instagram and Threads at strange_unusual_podcast, or our personal accounts, Roy Rampage and Calamity Casey. You can find us on X at _strangeunusual, at Calamity Casey, and at Roy Rampage. We're also on Facebook. Just search for the Strange and Unusual Podcast and look for our logo. I am also streaming on Twitch at twitch.tv/RoyRampage, as well as on Kick, the same information, but kick.com. Stop by. We can talk episodes. We can talk true crime. It'd be cool. If you'd like, you can join us over on Patreon at patreon.com/strangeunusual, where we have some old bonus episodes on there. We also have access to our Discord, monthly polls, more or less, and, you know, just general conversation, and you help support the podcast. However, I understand right now times are tough and things are still expensive, so if you cannot support us financially, I totally get it. I just ask that you like, share, subscribe, rate, review, all that kind of stuff. And if you leave us a 5-star review on a place where I can find your review and read it, I will read it on air. As long as it's, like, you know, not racist. It can be mean. Just not racist.
Yeah.
I'm simped. Actually checking to see if we have any. Nope. Still the same with 2 1 stars though.
Oh hell yeah. Well, oh well.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. Oh, we didn't say Free Palestine.